Well, this is a different format to broadcast the information we publish here at Los Angeles Express on the clergy sexual abuse crisis. It won't be a full reading of the story, since it would be very difficult to read stories of more than 5,000 characters in audio with a single voice and without the required post-production to make them more engaging. It will be a summary of what I think, as the author of the stories, are the most important aspects, the key, the most decisive issues to understand what is happening and why we pay attention to these issues. This week's story seeks to summarize information on several issues relevant to understand what is happening regarding the sexual abuse crisis, following the approach we have been developing here at Los Angeles Press. The idea is that this is a global issue, a global problem. This is not an isolated trouble, an isolated issue, and that is why it is important to us that even if some of these cases come from France or Chile, and we are primarily a media outlet serving Mexican communities in the United States and Mexico, we still pay attention to these cases because we are interested in approaching the issue from a broader, a global perspective. So that is why, on the one hand, we are very interested on Marco Rupnik's new trial, although in my opinion, it is not quite clear what will happen with this new canonical trial. Rupnik is a former Jesuit, but he remains a priest. He has been very famous. He gained notoriety in the early years of this century because he gained the trust of a significant number of key figures in the Roman Curia during John Paul II's pontificate. As such, he was awarded many commissions, many requests to put pieces of sacred art in some of the most relevant Catholic sanctuaries all over the world. That is what makes his case very important. He was, by any account, a star, a celebrity of sacred Catholic art. The problem with Marco Rupnik is that the abuse he perpetrated, unlike what Marcial Maciel or Fernando Caradima were doing here in Mexico and in Chile, respectively, attacking underage males, Rupnik was attacking primarily adult females. It is important to remember in this respect that the Catholic Church does not prosecute these two types of abuse with the same severity. Same-sex abuse, especially against minors, will receive more attention from the church, although, of course, there are always exceptions. One of them is that of Julio César Grassi, an Argentine priest. Some call him the Maciel of Argentina, although for others, that title belongs to Carlos Miguel Vuela. Grassi used to have something similar to an orphanage in Argentina, from which he took those who would become his victims of abuse. Although in theory, in Grassi's case, it would be relatively easy to laicize him, to defrock him, in practice, he remains a priest. That is how he acts and how he presents himself, even on those occasions when he goes to request an early release from prison or to be released on bail under the Argentine judiciary system. In Rodney's case, it is important to note that there is no doubt he is guilty. That is why the Jesuits have already expelled him. That is why even the French bishops have decided to cover up the mosaics he installed early in this century at one of the wings of the Basilica of Our Lady of Lourdes, Notre Dame de Lourdes, in southern France. So there is a clear awareness that Rupnik is guilty. There are sectors of the Catholic Church that accept he is guilty. However, there are other sectors, including Bishop Jurich Bisjak of Koper, Slovenia, who do not see it that way. That bishop, which is the bishop of the place where Rupnik was born in the 20th century, accepted him as a priest in his own diocese. As soon as the Jesuits expelled Rupnik, he immediately, this bishop, Bisjak, immediately incarnated him into his diocese. When I say he incarnated him, what I mean is he integrated him as a priest assigned to his diocese. Priests must have the so-called licenses, and Bisjak was willing to issue those licenses to Rupnik, so he remains a priest without problem. Something similar can be said about what the Brazilian bishops did, because just as Rupnik went to decorate the Basilica of Our Lady of Lourdes in France, he also decorated the Basilica of Our Lady of Aparecida in Brazil, the largest Marian sanctuary in the entire Catholic world. There, unlike what the bishops, what the French bishops did, the Brazilian bishops are keeping the mosaics in plain sight without accepting the blatant contradiction. They are very happy to have Rupnik's art there to be seen. That creates a very serious situation. That is why it is not entirely clear to me what will happen with the new canonical trial, because the trial will basically follow the same rules of the code of canon law that existed during his first trial. The code has not been reformed recently, or at least not since Rupnik's first trial, and it will not be reformed just to sanction them, so, just to sanction him. So yes, there is a very serious doubt there. The Vatican presented this new trial as a novelty of sorts because they appointed a new panel of five judges, and in this panel of five judges, there is the expectation that there will be some females, you know, some women. I'm not so sure about the consequences of such decision, because even with those new female judges, there is doubt about who are them. The Vatican never released their names nor any other details about the panel of judges. Are there going to be female members of orders such as the Regnum Christi, the so-called consecrated of the Legion of Christ? Or are they going to be numerary or supernumerary members of Opus Dei who are willing to do what they are ordered to do so in cases like this? Part of the problem that always exists with members of Regnum Christi and the Opus Dei is that they present themselves as lay persons, as somehow having somehow some kind of autonomy from the hierarchy, but in reality they are more obedient to their superiors than some nuns, some religious sisters of traditional orders. So We will have to see what Leo XIV does there once the result of that trial is known, because there are also other trials pending right now in the Vatican. One of those is that of former cardinal by some accounts, still cardinal by other accounts, Angelo Becciu, which will also deserve the attention, and in which, unfortunately, it seems that rather than progress compared to what we saw with Pope Francis, we are actually witnessing some sort of regression, which is something very worrying. There is also the debate, the arguing about the future of Torre Ciudad, which is an important sanctuary for the Opus Dei. It is one of the places they made their own. Torre Ciudad, for practical purposes, defines what the Opus Dei is as a global Catholic, something similar to an order. They call themselves a prelature. I'm not so sure if they will remain so, but it is an entity similar to an order. No, they have up there in Torre Ciudad, there has been since the Middle Ages a Marian shrine. Torre Ciudad is a small town in Aragon in northern Spain. That ancient medieval shrine was in very bad shape already by the 1960s. So José María Escrivá de Balaguer, the Opus Dei's founder, with the money he had at his disposal, offered the bishop of Barbastro Monzón, which is where Torre Ciudad is located, that he would repair the shrine if the bishop was willing to give Opus Dei full control of the property. It is not clear, in my opinion, how much the bishop was willing to hand over the property to Opus Dei in perpetuity. Opus Dei has a tradition of being a rather abusive predatory organization, hence the accusations against them, for example, in Argentina. So we will have to see what Pope XIV decides on this regard. Unfortunately, I'm very pessimistic on this issue, although I do have some hope in the fact that, at least in this case, the bishops in Spain seem to be aware of the need to put an end to the excesses, to the abuses, even against themselves from Opus Dei. I hope they do, and well, I also hope you will continue to read the installments of this series. I repeat, it is very important for us because we try to present the issue of clergy sexual abuse in religious context from a global perspective, you know, from a global approach. Another topic addressed in this week's story is the visit, which I believe was poorly planned, of Gabriel Boric, the president of Chile, to Rome. I think he and his team were unable to grasp the potential consequences of going there as they did, especially since there has been no substantive progress regarding the many cases of clergy sexual abuse in Chile over the last 50 years at least. Even after this piece was published here at Los Angeles Press, in Chile there were news of what was practically the exoneration of a new group of Chilean Legionaries of Christ who had recently been accused of sexual abuse. As far as I have been able to see the papers of the case, to read the papers of the case, they managed to get the Chilean judicial authorities to exonerate them, so they are now free. And I think that further soured the perception of the Chilean president visit to Rome. I wish him as much as Leo XIV realized that many of the promises made back in 2018 by Pope Francis never actually materialized. It is true that the four so-called bishops of Caradima, including Barrios, the former bishop of Osorno, did indeed resign. But beyond that, which I cannot see as punishment, there are no reparations, and that is the main problem. And that is why I think it is very important for us to keep track of what happens there and in many other countries where sexual abuse sadly keeps happening. I thank you. I hope you will remain reading us, hearing us, and you know how you can reach me. My name is Rodolfo Soriano Núñez. You can find me over Twitter. My handle there is RSNUNECIDA, a Twitter or X, however you want to call them, or you can get my email here at my page in Los Angeles Press. Thank you very much.